Thank you for joining us for this podcast episode of Talking with Religious Historians. This is a short form episode of our regular Ecclesiastical History Society podcast, wherein we talk to established religious historians to find out more about their careers and what advice they would give early career researchers. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Betts, a historian of early modern British medicine and religion. For today's episode, we're excited to have Dr. Caroline Bowden on the show. Dr. Bowden is an honorary senior research fellow in the School of History at Queen Mary University, London. Her research focuses on 17th and 18th century English convents in exile. She was the principal investigator on the project Who Were the Nuns, started in 2008 to investigate the membership of the English convents in exile. From the opening of the first institution in Brussels to the nuns' return to England as a result of the French Revolution. Today, she joins us to share her experience of academia and how to utilize databases in humanities research. Dr. Bowden, we're happy to welcome you to our podcast.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much for being here. So, to kick off our episode, would you mind discussing a bit about your academic background and how you came to academia?
Certainly, because I think my experience is perhaps a bit different from most other people who are working at this level, in that I was rather a late starter, and I did my PhD research in midlife looking at attitudes to girls' education. And I considered evidence from Catholic families as well as Protestant and as part of considering whether religion influenced the educational experience of girls. That's in the mid-16th and early 17th century. And I concluded that paternal attitudes to the future life experience of their daughters was really the prime factor in deciding how to educate them rather than religion. Now, the importance of this for the project is that I was very deliberately looking for evidence of Catholic women and girls and how it came across in printed records and manuscripts, and eventually found myself drawn towards the printed records that came from the English convents in exile, and I realized how little I knew about the convents themselves. So gradually I was drawn further towards the lives of these nuns, who many of whom were extremely well educated, even to the point of many of them knowing Latin. And I eventually made contact with the descendants of the convents abroad and very gradually earned their trust and was able to use their manuscripts. And all of that made me realize how much there was to be gained by studying the kind of manuscripts that came from the convents, but also the importance of learning more about the members. And gradually, as I worked and tried to make lists of the members of these English convents, I realized how valuable being able to search for them in a digital way through a database would be, and started thinking about how to construct a database project. Now, it sounds as if it really was quite a short-term effort, perhaps, but because the sources were difficult to find, to get access to, and I always had to work with the permission of the nuns, it really took some time to produce. This was going to be sort of foundational research that would allow us to know how many nuns there were, where they came from, and more about their families.
That's fascinating. So it really sounds like this was the starting off point for what would become the Who Were the Nuns project. Would you mind actually telling us a little more about that project as a whole?
Certainly. There were in total 22 enclosed convents that were set up to satisfy the demand for English Catholic families to find convents for their daughters, and they would have to be in exile because it was illegal to set up a convent in England, so that they were making a forbidden journey across the channel to institutions that they were not allowed to join, that the institutions shouldn't even exist. So it was really quite a complicated and dangerous process for them all. And enclosure meant that these girls would be living within the walls of an institution for the whole of the rest of their lives once they joined. And so there was very little movement out of the convents. Of course, we've all been studying and realizing that these walls were porous. There were reasons why people had to leave, for health reasons or to set up new convents. But in theory, girls lived enclosed. And what I found when I first started to do my research, that there were still, in effect, some convents which were enclosed and even had a grill marking the divide between the outside world and the nuns. I have personally talked to nuns through the grill, and they passed me some manuscripts underneath the counter, so to speak. So I've seen how it works in operation in the 21st century, as well as reading about it in the 17th. So enclosure is an important part of this process, and it meant that we had to think very carefully about how we were going to present the information. We needed the nuns to have trust in us as academics, that we were not going to misuse their sources. And so it did place constraints on what we were able to do sometimes, but it made it all worthwhile when we were able to get the agreement and build up our collection of sources, and also work out ways that we could record the sources so we would have a record of the data that we were collecting. Because, of course, a database is only as good as the data you are putting into it. It has to be able to be validated. It is no point in inventing material to go into a database, because you would be creating something that was unreliable. Historians needed to be able to trust our work as researchers. And so we had to make certain that we were presenting material that could be supported, tested by others, and to keep our sources very clearly accessible so that we could check our data all the time.
Now, what is so interesting about this is that there's so many moving parts, it sounds like. And even though you're working on history, you know, between 1600 and 1800, you're still having to work with people today and how to use that information so it's sensitive to their needs. So what kind of advice would you give to anyone listening who might want to incorporate something like this substantial database into their own humanities project? What kinds of things will they need to think of?
So I think, as I indicated, there are things that are important to all databases, because you have to be able to continue to link your data to the sources. And so I think with cameras and other ways of recording texts, and where you can, to be able to use not necessarily the original texts, because that presents either complications on where, destroying the data because too many people are touching it. It's rather like the caves at Altamira, where people, if they breathe, it spoils the images. So you have to be careful of conservation issues, but you need to be able to link data always. And I think for women's history, women's texts are tend to be more difficult to find than, say, political texts, or where there are sources in the public domain, and you can link those. But there are a number of database projects which are using transcriptions. They're carefully edited, looked over, and so providing you've got really good editions. And we did have one Australian PhD which was based on one of our texts, and she commented in her introduction to her PhD that she was able to verify that this was an excellent edition, because everything where she checked the pages seemed to be exactly right. So I think that's very important for anybody considering making a database. Make certain the quality of your data is as good as you can make it. There will always be holes. Early modern data is very messy. And for the nuns, the complications added by the French Revolution and the impact of the Revolutionary Wars, when many of them had to move to England for safety, some of them lost a great many of their documents during that terrible transfer, whereas others were able to bring quite a lot to England. So you've got missing data, you have messy data. Often girls' dates of birth were not properly recorded. So when you're constructing a database, you have to take that into account. And we were very fortunate in that our, I suppose, referring informally, our techie, Jan Broadway, was a historian herself, an early modernist, who had done her computing training following her own PhD, and she understood very well the difficulties of early modern sources. So the period you're working on does make a difference to what kind of data you've got and how you use it. But that's no reason for not attempting a database based on early modern sources. Be aware of the challenges of this missing data. Don't try and make it say too much. Be careful of the interpretation that you put onto it. Be circumspect in your conclusions, and be very careful of the context. If you're talking about a very different way of life, for example, as in convents, where the religious purpose is much more important than any other aspect of record keeping, then that all has to be taken into account. But that's no reason for not doing it. And I think that the way that this database is used and very widely referenced by a number of historians shows that I think that we were really successful in what we could do and our checking and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's very good advice. And one of the things that you mentioned, I just want to touch on that again. When you were talking about working with somebody who knows technology, who also knows history, do you think that there were any challenges? Now, maybe in your case, because you were working with somebody who had a history degree, she knew a bit more. But do you think there would be any challenges when you're working with the technology versus the history? And would you have any advice on how to kind of cross that bridge when communicating as a historian to somebody who may not understand the background but has to put together the database for you?
I think for James Kelly and myself, you know, we were both working hard on the data. And I think we both found that you have to have the courage of your convictions, I think, as historians. And very often, historians don't need to have complicated technology to be able to produce really satisfactory databases. And sometimes I think techies are rather disappointed. If you've got somebody who's come from primarily a technology background, they want to do really elaborate things and complicated things. Whereas historians very often they're dealing with complicated ideas, but actually the technology that they need is really quite straightforward. We constructed our database on huge Excel spreadsheets, which, you know, many people think as rather simple tools, but our Jan Broadway, our techie, she was able to convert that into the database in quite a straightforward way. And it's important, I think, to use open source software where you are publicly funded, because that way people can use your data very easily and they can reuse your data. And I'm still hoping that more people will work out ways that they can, from the website, that they can download the data themselves and find that there are different kinds of analysis that we didn't think of using, or we didn't have time to do, we didn't have the resources, and use it in different ways, and then report back to us and say, now, this is what we've been able to do. We give some examples on the website of analysis that we were able to do with our follow-on funding, but there is much more that can be done. And one of the, I think it turns out to be quite complicated, that we haven't been able to do as yet, which would be very interesting, is work out the size of communities each year, so that you would be able to just quite straightforwardly decide, ah, yes, I will look and see how many Benedictines there were in Paris in 1710, and compare that, say, with sepulchres from Liège in the same year, and see what size of community there is on an annual basis, things like that, and do more work on age at death and what that tells us about some of the communities. So there are then different ways that your data can be used.
I think that's so great, the emphasis on open access and encouraging other scholars to start on the work that you began and help continue that out into the community. That's what we're here for, right? So I think that's just really great that that's built into your project. And I want to actually end the episode with a question that I ask all of the guests who come on here, which is, what is your favorite part about being an academic?
I think the favorite part is actually being excited about what you do. I've had, you know, such treats, you know, finding things, and a very interesting trip to Maryland when I went to look at Carmelite resources, because four Carmelites went from the English convents to Port Tobacco in Maryland in 1790. And that was looking at looking at the first English convent that was set up in the New World. Before that, any Americans who wanted to come over to Europe for Catholic education, which wasn't available in America, had to travel the Atlantic. And so bands of young Americans were traveling over to Europe, girls and boys. But in 1790, they could stay in America. And so that was looking at a very different side of the convents in exile, and talking to people from a completely different language and background. It was exciting, and I think I shall never regret that. And working on something like this project, the cooperation between groups of people and having meetings to discuss things, I think I loved being on a collaborative project. So the excitement and the collaboration, I think, will always stay with me, and that I really do value.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. This has been a really fascinating talk, and I know our audience is going to learn a lot about that collaborative spirit with building databases and being on big projects. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Bowden, for being on, and I wish you all the best in your future research.
Thank you, Emily. It's been a great pleasure, and I hope that people won't ever give up, doing this kind of research. And if it seems a challenge at the beginning, by just chipping away, it all becomes clearer, and it is exciting.
It is. It really is. Thank you so much.
Not at all.